You're listening to the ELT Chat Podcast, Uncut. On the 11th of July, we were discussing spelling in ELT Chat. It was a lively and interesting discussion with plenty of ideas and talking points. One name which was repeatedly mentioned during the chat was Joanna Sterling, the author of Teaching Spelling to English Language Learners. And I'm delighted to say that Joanna now joins me on the line. Hello, Joanna.
Hi, James.
Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Okay. I was sorry to miss the chat. Unfortunately, I had to work that night, so couldn't come. But no, it's great to be here now.
No, it's good. And now you've got an opportunity to catch up and to let us know what you think.
Yes, because there were things that I was, when I read through the chat, I was burning to say. I thought I missed it, so well, it's nice to have the chat.
Now you've got your chance.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with the basics, okay? Mm-hmm. Singer Nick tweeted, reading is the key to good spelling. Do you agree with that?
I think if you don't read, you're probably going to find it really hard to improve your spelling, because as you read and you see words a lot, then it'll probably help you to recognize when words are spelt wrongly. So yes, I think spelling is definitely important, but reading is definitely important for spelling, but I don't think it's enough. There are a lot of people who can actually read well but can't spell well, which I think tells us quite a lot. And often I think people don't really notice spelling. They get the message from reading, mm-hmm. but they don't really notice the spelling. And then because reading is receptive, you know, they can't always transfer that to the active skill of writing. So yes, I think reading is important, but I think we need to do lots more than that. I'm quite convinced it's not enough for a lot of people.
Okay, yeah, because Sharon Hartle followed this up by saying that she's noticed that students who learn a lot from songs and places like this, rather than reading, are not good spellers. So in her opinion, reading is definitely, if you've had a lot more exposure to reading then, as opposed to music or films, then you're going to be a better.
Okay, I mean, it's an interesting observation. But yeah, I think that, yes, if you've learnt it hourly, if you've learnt English hourly, you know, so from listening, and you haven't been reading, it does make sense that you wouldn't be able to spell as well. But I still don't think that just reading is enough. I think we have to help students to really notice spelling. We have to be a bit more explicit about it. Not for all. For some people, reading seems to be enough. But for others, they definitely need more.
Okay. If I can read one of my own tweets now.
Why not?
Rather provocatively, I admit, asked the question, which is more important, the ability to spell or the ability to use a spell checker?
Well, I agree with you. Well, I suppose it's
good.
A question, but I think so often I hear people say, oh, you know, nobody can spell nowadays because of these spell checkers, you know, they're ruining people's ability to spell. And I think spell checkers are fantastic things. I use one all the time. But I think the problem is very often that people don't use them well and perhaps haven't been trained to use them, or might sometimes be lazy or in a hurry. So I've had students who just always take the first word that's offered. You know, they don't think about it. I can remember once having a student who was writing, I can't remember, it was some kind of formal report, I think, and he wanted to write, the main thing is blah, 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 which was a good way to start his sentence. but it came out as the main thigh bone is. It was just, you know, ridiculous, and he made himself look silly. And so, yeah, I do work with students on actually helping them to use spell checkers, and where they really have to decide. I write some words and they have to decide which word I really meant. Mm-hmm. I put in some very, very wrong spelling.
Yeah.
And the spell checker offers several alternatives and they have to choose which it is. And that just helps them to think, okay, it's not always the first one that comes up. But I don't think we should blame spell checkers. I think they're brilliant tools.
Yeah, and I think now I mentioned as well about auto-correction on a lot of devices, which is becoming more and more common, I think. And I think within a few years, it'll be everywhere. It's not just a spell check, but it's also going to auto-correct as you're typing. How do you feel about that?
I'm not so keen on auto-correct. Well, for myself, I love it. Because I don't seem to be able to type the word the. I always write T-E-H every time I write it. So I love it when the spell checker, when the autocorrect puts that right for me. Mm-hmm. But I think as a language learning tool, the autocorrect isn't very helpful. Mainly because it's invisible. We don't see it happening, so we can't learn from it. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a spell checker, we can if we have to look and say, oh no, I meant this word, then there is an ability to learn from it. I don't know that people always do, but they could. The other problem, by the way, I forgot to mention with spell checkers, is homophones and, you know, words that are real words, but not the word that the person meant to write.
Yes.
Of course, spell checkers are getting better and some of them are starting to pick those out. But generally, you know, all a spell checker will usually do is flag up a word that isn't an accepted spelling.
Yeah, when I was at university and I studied some journalism, and I remember we had a lecture from a real journalist, and she said that, you know, she was very opposed to spell checking and saying and that her example was that if you put Duchess of Pork into a document, it's not going to bring that up as on the spell checker, and yet, you know, you would probably lose your job over it. So
yes.
I've always remembered the Duchess of Pork as being an example of why you have to, well, which is something I also mentioned later on, which was about the importance of proofreading is perhaps being as important as spelling ability. How important do you think the relationship is between those two?
Absolutely. I mean, we are all getting a bit lazy, I think, about that. You know, sometimes if I'm doing an online chat or something and I'm trying to keep up, you know, and then I look back at what I've written and I think, what a mess, you know. And people love it when they catch me out on spelling mistakes as well. So I have to be really careful. I think that's something that we can do, that we can help our students with as well, really getting them to proofread. Because I think everybody says, oh, spelling is getting so much worse. I'm not sure if it is really, because I think there have always been people who couldn't spell. I think what's getting worse is that we often have to write things quickly and we're not taking the time just to glance back and look at what we've written. And I'm as guilty as anybody. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, so Teacher Phil tweeted about the difference between American English and British English variations. and I'd like to broaden that out into, I mean, it's not, obviously we don't just have American English and British English anymore, but we have more variations than that. And when you think about having to choose between those two different versions, and I think, or the further variations, especially when you think about the teachers who are listening to this, who are neither British nor American, and they have to make that decision about, you know, how they spell colour. Where do you stand on that?
It helps if you're consistent. And I think that's what most, for example, most examiners would say, that they don't mind whether you use British English or American English, but then you have to be consistent. Mm-hmm. I think it's not that important, other than exams, you know, if you do mix them a little bit, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It depends what the purpose of the writing is. I think there are, you know, there are worse crimes than putting in the occasional word that's spelt in a different variety of English, because it's still communicative.
Yeah, they're bigger fish to fry, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's not something that would bother me unduly. You know, I point it out to my students. Sometimes, you know, teaching certain words, and I just say, of course, in American English, this would be spelt differently. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I've never found it to be a particularly big issue. I don't correct if my students have done writing and they've put in some American English spelling. Certainly, if they're doing it all the way through, I wouldn't ever correct it. That would be an awful thing to do. It would suggest that they were wrong. But I might just point out that we write things differently in the UK.
Yeah. Following on from that then, and this is a controversial subject. It's been controversial for a very long time, about spelling reform. Ministry of Shiny, great name, tweeted, do we need spelling reform in English? Is it even possible?
Well, I think the second part of that question is really important. I've got a blog all about spelling, and I get quite a lot of spelling reformists on the blog, and they write in this funny English, you know, which is meant to be simpler, and sometimes I'm thinking, what do they mean? I know English isn't the simplest language to read and write, but there are reasons for most spellings. And I think it might seem that spelling reform would make things simpler, but it doesn't always, because it can take away links to other words. Really, I think really important thing for me about English spelling is that it's not phonetically spelt. Only about 50% of words are phonetically spelt. Mm-hmm. It's not like Italian or Finnish or lots of other languages where if you hear a new word, you could spell it. We know English isn't like that. Yeah. A lot of it is etymological. It's related to the origins of the words. Mm-hmm. Also, words have lexical links. So, for example, if we take the word two, as in the number two, mm-hmm. okay, and sometimes my students say, why is there a W in there? You don't pronounce a W.
It's a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. That's the first thing I say. And then the second thing I say is, well, look at these other words. Look at twice, 12, 20, twist, twins. They're all related to two. Hmm. It's not really that the spelling is strange. It's that the pronunciation has changed.
Yeah. It's true.
Okay. Having done that, I've just forgotten what your question was.
it's okay. So do we need spelling reform?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So let's say a spelling reformist thought, oh, we'll take that W out of two. Then you've lost that lexical link. Hmm. And not to mention confusing it with the other words with the same pronunciation. Yeah. So... I think there are big dangers with spelling reform. Also, if you think about American spelling reform, they'd actually had plans for a much greater spelling reform than in fact, you know, it's not so different, American spelling.
Yeah.
But originally they wanted a lot more reform, but the American public just wouldn't wear it. Mm. You know, they just didn't really want it. And I'm not sure that the majority of native speakers really want spelling reform.
Yeah,
because there's also the problem of literature. You know, we want to be able to read literature. Sorry, you were going to say?
No, I was going to say, I mean, because we have to remember, of course, that it affects them too, right?
Well,
it
yes.
It doesn't just affect people learning the language, but it also would affect the people who already use the language. You can't have spelling reform for one and not for the other.
Yeah. Mind you, I have sometimes wondered whether you could have two different written Englishes. So there was, well, you know, sort of that for people who, I don't know, I might be on dodgy ground here, but for people who, well, it's their native language, you know, we keep what we've got, and maybe there is a kind of simplified version for learners, but I'm not really convinced about that. The other thing I think about spelling reform is that it tends to be something that happens naturally. I think it's a very hard thing to force onto people.
Yeah.
But things change. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the pronoun you, if it just came to be written just with the single letter U, because we're writing it like that so often now. And, you know, the apostrophe in it's so many people are struggling with it that I wonder if it'll just disappear.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of those things just happen naturally.
Yeah, well, I think that's the nature of English language, isn't it, is that rules are not imposed from outside, but rules are imposed from within, if you like. You know, people, it's a very democratic language, unlike French, for example, where, you know, there is no one making that decision. I mean, it's made by the people who use the language, and obviously there are now more people using the language than ever before. And I think that one of the great things about the strange and perhaps annoying, if you're a learner, spelling of English is that it reflects it's a cultural thing. It reflects the culture of the people that use it. Yes, that may be difficult if you're a learner, but I think that is also part of the strength that has enabled English at this time to be the global language. So
yeah, I think you're right, because one of the things that we do in English is when we borrow words from other languages. And when I say borrow, I always think it's a funny thing to say.
Yeah,
don't give them back. But
and we're basically stealing, aren't we?
Yeah, stealing. Yes, exactly. Yeah. When we borrow words from other languages, we nearly always keep the spelling of the language that it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, let's say, a language like Spanish, for example, they're much more likely to change it. If you take the word football.
Mm-hmm.
In Spanish, they're using the same word, but it's spelled F-U-T-B-O-L, I think. You know, so they're changing that, but we don't. Just something else, if you don't mind, if I just go back to the spelling reform.
Sure.
I think spelling reform in the past is actually responsible for some of the really odd spellings that we've got now. For example, if you take the word love, and if you look at that, if you just write that down and you look at it, you think, why is it spelled L-O-V-E? Because normally an E on the end makes the vowel before the consonant makes it say its name. So an O ought to be pronounced O.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be love, the pronunciation, if you know, and you think, why is it like that? Well, the reason is because there are two reasons. One is we've got an O there rather than a U, because if you think back to medieval writing, it was really a series of up and down strokes, not round letters. Mm-hmm. There weren't many round letters. So a U and a V looked, in fact, identical. They were the same letter, really. So it was really hard to read. And so they decided to change the U to an O, so it was easier to read.
Yeah.
And then a bit later, somebody decided that we shouldn't, that English words should never end with a V. And so they thought, right, we can't have a word ending with a V, so let's stick an E on the end. And so we've now got this spelling, because people were trying to impose rules on English, we've got this spelling that is now more confusing than it would have been originally.
Yeah.
So,
very interesting example. Okay, so there was another element of the discussion, which where people were talking a bit about phonemic awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And Sue Lyon-Jones, ESL Courses, tweeted, don't get me wrong, I think phonemic awareness is good, but there are so many words that don't fit with the patterns. Where do you stand on phonemic awareness for our learners?
I mean, I think that we've obviously got to teach the basics of sound to letter correspondence. I mean, of course, it's an alphabetic language, so we have to teach the basics of that. But I can't see much point in teaching all of the ways that we can spell any sound.
Mm-hmm.
Because, to be honest, I don't even think we native speaker children, I don't think it's that useful for them because it's such a hard thing to learn.
Yeah.
But with second language learners, you know, very often they can't pronounce words perfectly anyway. And so, you know, they're not going to be able to match those. But there are times when they do need some phonemic awareness, I think. With some vowel sounds, need some work on the difference is useful.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they're not going to be able to spell all words. But I think it's too complex to rely on that. I think we have to approach spelling from lots of different angles, looking at word origins, looking at word building, looking at lexical links, like I was talking about before with the word to,
yeah.
And just dealing with phonics is definitely not enough.
Yeah, I suppose the connection between the sound of the English language and the spelling of the English language is quite a complicated relationship, isn't it? And I think that teachers really have to be very careful about how they decide to explain that relationship. It's a difficult thing for us to deal with, isn't it?
Yeah, I think to me it's that we can't, I think we have to be really clear to our students from the beginning that it's not all based on sound. Because you must have seen these poems or sort of poems about a load of words that end with the letters O-U-G-H,
yeah,
and how they're all pronounced differently. Well, you know, and everybody laughs at those and, oh, what a terrible language English is.
Mm.
But actually, if you just think that is a common letter string in English, but it's not related to sound, then that's okay. You know, it's if you think that English is all related to sound, English spelling is all related to sound,
yeah,
then it starts to look chaotic.
Yeah.
But it isn't chaotic, but sound isn't the reason for all the spellings, which is, it doesn't make it easy to teach, but it's easier if you tell students from the start that it's not all about sound.
Okay. Tefulrinia tweeted, some nationalities struggle more than others, and in her opinion, it's easier for Latin languages. Do you agree with that? Do you have an experience of different cultures having different problems with spelling?
I mean, for me, the The people who've had the biggest problems in my experience have always been Arabic speakers. Okay. And I think there are several reasons for that. One, of course, is that they use a different alphabet, and it's much more phonetically regular than English is. Another is, I think it is a more oral language. And so in some ways, perhaps writing is less important. Their vowels, we have much more focus on vowels than they do. I think vowels are often a bit optional in Arabic, and sometimes my students seem to see them as a bit optional in English as well, you know, or which ones you use. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the whole thing of writing left to right and not right to left. So I think Arabic speakers have particular challenges when it comes to writing in English. It's interesting with Chinese students. I don't want to overgeneralize here, but this is just some things that I've noticed, that they don't have as many problems, I would say, generally, as Arabic learners. And I think that's because they're used to learning what words look like. Because for a lot of Chinese, that's what you have to do. You have to learn what a word looks like, not just what it sounds like. And they don't seem to have as many problems. Thinking about Latin languages, generally it's easier because so many words are similar, except often things like double letters.
Yeah,
I'm working with a Spanish group at the moment, and that's the biggest problem for them, and is actually which letters are doubled and which aren't.
Yeah, as someone who I've had an ongoing relationship with the Portuguese language, I have the opposite problem. Yeah, but actually, for me, the opposite problem generally tends to be good because it is much easier for me to spell in Portuguese than it would be if you're coming from learning Portuguese to English.
Right,
because the spelling in Portuguese is much more consistent with the sound of the language, so it's very easy.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something. Let's be a bit more practical now. Mm-hmm. And EAP teacher tweeted, rote learning is the best way to teach spelling. Do you agree with that?
I don't know that there is a best way to teach spelling, actually. I think you have to do lots of different things, partly because we've got different kinds of words with different reasons for their spelling. We've also got different people who learn in different ways on different days. And so I like to use all sorts of different methods. Mm-hmm.
Would you include any rote learning in that?
Yeah. Yeah, I would in... you probably know the system. A lot of children learn to spell using something called look, say, cover, write and check. So basically a student looks at a word and says it, and then they cover it and they write it and they check that it's right. Okay. I mean, I do that in a rather more, what can I say, not complicated way, but a rather more detailed way.
Yeah.
I get them to, which is a kind of rote learning. So they look at a word, they write it, they really, really look at it and they think about what could be difficult, how many letters there are. They look at the shape of the word. I do a lot of work on word shape and all of those things. And then they cover it and they write it several times. So that's a sort of rote learning. But I think they need to use their brains as well as just their memories, because if you think about something more, then you're going to remember it longer.
Okay, so
does that make sense?
Yes, of course. Right, yes. Okay. What do you think about mnemonics for keywords? Joanna Borisiak tweeted about this, and she thinks that some people think that it's not really teaching, so it's not so good.
I think it's a it's really interesting. There are certain words that that I always have problems spelling, that I need a mnemonic for. And sorry about this, but one of those words is diarrhea. Okay. I can't spell diarrhea. It's really tough word to spell. And I've got a mnemonic for that, which is the only way that I can spell it. But if anybody wants to know, my mnemonic is...
Go for it.
is dash in a real rush, hurry or else accident. And
there you go. Everyone's going to remember that now.
You know, I couldn't spell the word without. However, I think it's best if mnemonics are only used for words that you have particular problems with, that you really can't learn any other way, because our ultimate aim in spelling is automaticity. In other words, getting students to write things automatically without thinking about them.
Yeah.
And when you use a mnemonic, you're doing the opposite. You're stopping and you're thinking about each letter.
Yeah.
So although I think they can be extremely useful, I also agree with, sorry, I've forgotten who it was, but who said...
Joanna.
Oh, Joanna, yeah. Well, with a name like that, she must be right. That they, in a way... You're not learning. You're learning the mnemonic, and you're able to produce the correct spelling, but you haven't really learnt it.
Yeah,
that's my experience.
I have to share with you Diana Tremaine's example, which was a big hit, which is her mnemonic: big elephants can always understand small elephants.
Yeah, yeah. This is one that native speaker children are always taught for, because.
Yeah, which was a hit. I haven't heard that one
before. Yeah. No, it's a really good one. Yeah.
Okay, so Joanna again tweeted about error correction. And she said an interesting point regarding correction is that the famous red pen can draw attention and can reinforce incorrect spelling. So, but of course, now we all think, oh, we have to abandon the red pen. So how would you deal with incorrect spelling in written work?
Okay. I was, at first I thought, oh yeah, that's really, when I read that, I thought, yeah, that's really interesting. Then I thought, well, no, hang on a minute. It would, if you were writing the wrong spelling in a red pen, then that would draw students, you know, that might fix in students' heads, but you wouldn't do that, would you? I wasn't quite sure what she meant. But I mean, the red pen, green pen argument, I'm not too bothered. Yes, green maybe looks better. Some people seem to have a strong objection to red. I tend to just pick up any pen that's a different colour from what my students are using. But when I correct spelling, the first thing I ask myself is whether the student can learn from my correction. Actually, not just for spelling, any correction I do.
Sure.
Like, I get fed up of going through students' writing and putting S's on all their third-person singular present tenses, and I don't bother anymore because I think they're not going to learn from it.
Yeah.
So, and a bit the same with spelling. I think, can they learn from this? And so usually, if I want to correct something, I write the word above where they've written it, and I just put dash. I put in all the letters that they've spelt correctly, I write, and I just put dashes for the ones that are wrong. So then they just fill in those. Because I think if I just write the whole word, they're just going to think, oh, I made a mistake, but they probably, I don't think they'll do anything about it.
That's a really good tip. I think our listeners are going to find that.
If anybody's interested, I've written more on my blog about error correction. I can't remember exactly what the name of the blog post is called, but because it is something that people seem to be very concerned with, and I can understand why. So I've written several ideas for correcting spelling on there.
Okay, thank you. There'll be a link to your blog in the show description. So if you want to go to Joanna's blog, just have a look in the links with this podcast. Tuco tweeted here an activity that he or she enjoys, which is to change one letter in a word to make a sentence mean something completely different, preferably funny. Could you share with us an activity that you think is possibly your favourite or one of all your right. favourite activities for teaching spelling?
So many.
Yeah, I know. Choose your favourite one.
All right. Okay. I think one of my favourites is called Spelling Gym. Gym, G-Y-M. Yeah. That is not the name. And I do a lot of work on word shapes because it's been shown that poor spellers, weak spellers, often can't visualise spelling, whereas strong spellers can. So I'm trying to build that up in my students, that visualisation of words. And so for the spelling gym, I give my students a word and they close their eyes and they visualise the word. And I ask them how many letters in the word, so they try to count the letters in their head that they can see, and we talk about what are the tall letters. I call them letters with sticks, and the ones that drop below the line, letters with tails. And and then if there are some difficult letters in there, I get them to make them coloured and brighter. So we do this visualization, then they open their eyes, and everybody stands up and they put their hands on their shoulders. And we spell the word together. And when there's a letter that has a stick, that means a tall letter, they have to put both hands in the air. When they have a letter with a tail, they put their hands down to their thighs. And if they're young, they can touch their toes. But I often work with adults who, sometimes think they might not get up again. So we don't do that. And if they've got, if it's a letter that I call them inline letters, not with sticks or tails, they just cross their hands to the opposite shoulder. So we're kind of doing this gym exercise with the words, and it always goes down really well. It's a lovely little warmer just to do on some spelling of vocabulary from the last lesson or something like that. But actually, the most important part of it for me is that visualization at the beginning. I think that really helps them.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a great activity for
it's good fun
for people to try out there. Okay. So here's what Naomi Epstein, Naomi Shima on Twitter, describes as the $1 million question. how do you get your students to care about their spelling?
Oh right. Okay. That it is. I think if I had the answer to that. I'd be a very happy woman. But sometimes I think you can point out times when spelling makes people look a bit daft, and we actually discuss in class how important spelling is. And very often people say that they think that it is, but then they're still making spelling mistakes themselves. So it is really hard. I don't have a great answer for it. But one thing I think we can do, one thing that has worked for me is making their writing public.
Yeah.
So making an audience for their writing.
Yeah.
And then I find if students know that other people are going to read their writing, not just me, then very often they will proofread it more carefully. And but there's not a lot I can do about when they're writing on Facebook or whatever. But then maybe it doesn't matter. Within the circles they move in, spelling's not so important. And I don't think it's my job. I never correct people's spelling outside teaching. I don't think it's my job to do that. And, I think it would it's insulting mm-hmm. sometimes to people.
Yeah, definitely.
But what they do need to know is that they have to spell correctly in certain situations.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the most really I can say.
Yeah. No. Excellent answer. Okay. So the final tweet I want to read to you, and I think you'll like this one, is also by the excellently named Ministry of Shiny, who said, "Definitely look for Joanna Sterling's book and blog. Have used it with Arabic students, and it was very useful."
I do like that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I wrote a book called Teaching Spelling to English Language Learners. And it was my whole interest in spelling started mainly because of my Arabic learners, actually. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I couldn't help them. They asked me how to improve spelling. And I said things like, oh, you need to read a lot. And I knew that that wasn't the whole answer. So I started researching it. Then I did my MA dissertation, and somehow a few years later, it turned into a book. So in the book, I start off, there are three sections. The first part is about the issues around spelling, about the language itself, and about teaching it to English language learners. Then in the second part, I outline a methodology for teaching it mm-hmm. to English language learners. And the final part is lots of activities, about 70 different activities that you can do to help students.
And I understand congratulations are in order, as you've won an award. Can you tell us about that?
Right. OK. I'm delighted that the British Council have got a new award for ELT writing. And I have to say, I didn't actually win the award as such. Mm-hmm. Michael Swan and Catherine Walter won that. But I got a special commendation, which I was very happy about.
It sounds like an award to me.
So. Thank you very much. Yes. It was all administered by the Society of Authors. So it was wonderful. I got to go down to London and be presented. I was presented with something. So I think it was an award. And people said lots of nice things. And so, I was delighted to get that because, in fact, I self-published the book, mm-hmm. which means that as well as writing it, I did all the editing, the layout, the indexing. I do all the marketing and everything. Yeah. And one of my ex-students did the cover. But otherwise, I did everything myself. So I was pretty chuffed about that.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You have your blog, the appropriately named spelling blog.
Yep.
What can people find there?
Lots of stuff about spelling, sometimes about the systems of English spelling, especially when I find interesting little things or things that I think teachers particularly want. Sometimes ways to teach, as I say, ways to correct, or little spelling games, things like that, links to other sites, all that kind of thing. Also, there are some downloadable resources there. There are some things that support the book. I've made some audio recordings that people can download, for example, where there are dictations and stuff like that. Lots of things. And I've also got, a few months ago, I started a Facebook page as well, which is called Making Sense of English Spelling.
Anna's book, Teaching Spelling to English Language Learners, is available now via her blog. And you can find a link to that, as well as her Facebook page, on the info page for this podcast at eltchatpodcast.podomatic.com. All that remains for me is to thank Joanna for joining us today. It was great to speak to you.
I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
And thanks to you for listening.